You're listening to A Real Piece of Work. I probably shouldn't say it that way. You're listening to A Real Piece of Work, a jobs podcast for aspiring professionals, brought to you by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR, and Junior Achievement of the Heartland. Now here's your hosts, Matt and Joy.
Good morning, Joy. How are you doing today?
Matt, I'm doing pretty well. It's a Wednesday. It's spring. The sun is shining. I'm really excited about our guest today. I'm going to get to my thoughts in a couple of minutes. I'm going to let you go first with yours and then feed in.
Well, it's a combination of personal and just as a citizen. I think what this guest does every day impacts almost everybody in the world in their day to day. It's just maybe they're not realizing it. Or there's might be confusion on what exactly it means to sit in the seat that this individual sits in. And also, I love the fact that Kurt may not know this, but one of the Watermans, Dana Waterman, was my soccer coach years ago and had the privilege of playing with his son. And so I always love when I can circle back a little bit to some personal connections with some of these interviews. So that's where I'm at today, Joy. What about you?
For me, we look at titles a lot of times, and I think, I take myself back as we were talking, before we started recording, on just my high school, my 16-year-old self. And if someone were to talk to me about a lawyer or someone in that position, my mind immediately went to always in the courtroom. That's the option. That's what you can do. Right. But as I sit here today and where I just actually came from, I shot across the factory floor from giving a two different trainings to some employees on through ethics and compliance on sexual harassment and bullying in the workplace and those types of things. And when I think about that, and we had our ethics and compliance team actually down yesterday from corporate, and just, how important those things are outside of not just necessarily the courtroom, but so I'm curious to hear from Kurt, his job, what he's done to get to where he's at, but then just also help our students and our broader base of listeners understand that which directions they can go if it's something that they're interested in. So that's where I'm from sitting from today, from an HR perspective. Obviously it's important when it comes to corporations and companies as much. So excited to have Kurt here with us today. So I guess I should do the introduction then, or I'll let you.
Please do.
Kurt Spurgeon. Did I say that correctly?
You said it correctly, yes.
With Lane and Waterman. So please do tell us what you're all about. Thanks for being here today. And we'll just kickstart with that.
Yeah, so thanks for having me on, first off. So I'm an attorney. Now again, as we'll talk about a bit on this podcast, that can have quite a broad, connotation depending on what type of stuff you're doing. So I would be considered a general business or corporate attorney. So the bulk of what I do on a day-to-day basis is work with small, medium, and large businesses on, general business transactions. Whether that's buying, selling a business, financing a business, starting up a business, a lot of contractual review and analyzing, assessing various things. Also do some securities work. And I'd say probably 50% of what I do would be, the terms would be used, mergers and acquisitions would be the legal term, but basically it's, I represent a client either buying or selling a business, and working to negotiate and assist them with that. Another probably 20-25% of what I do would be general corporate counsel for, small, medium sized, large businesses, where you're basically any kind of, legal issues that arise, I'd be their first point of contact to, either advise them on it or, at our firm, we have, quite a few attorneys that specialize in other areas as well. And if it's some issue that's an employment issue or an issue that's outside of my wheelhouse, I have enough general knowledge on things to point the client in the right direction and get them in touch with the right people. And then probably another 10% of what I do is I do some brewery and distillery law, advising breweries. I also advise startups and people on private offerings, which is securities work, and then environmental law, which again is
Kurt, the M&A merger and acquisition corporate counsel, I get that very easily. I'm just kind of curious, how'd you get into a little niche of breweries?
Mostly just from some of the business work I was doing, and then some other former partners here at the firm that were working with some small breweries. I didn't realize this until starting to work in that area, that it's a pretty complex set of laws that are there that have kind of been held over since prohibition days, state to state and federal, that these breweries are having to navigate whenever you see a new brewery pop up or a new distillery pop up, which, you know, has been quite a few of them in the last 20 years that's starting to proliferate. There's a lot of regulations and red tape to go through and navigate through compared to other types of businesses because of the nature of their product and how much it's regulated. So, and because of that, they've often need advice and need attorneys to assist them with trying to navigate some of those things. So
I appreciate that follow-up on that specific question. Before we start diving in a little deeper though, what was the interest that drew you into law? Why are you in the seat you're in?
Yeah, so I took kind of and this is something I think, you know, for students that are listening here, you know, and I think this goes for a lot of careers, you know, you don't necessarily need to know this is what I want to do when you're in high school or even when you go to college for that matter. I played basketball in college. When I was in high school, I had I didn't have stellar grades, partially because I was recruited by a lot of Division I colleges and all these colleges, I was going to be able to get in based on playing basketball and being offered scholarship at those schools. And so I really didn't think twice about how good I did in school or think about have any kind of, you know, clear thought process as to what do I want to do. I was mostly just focused on basketball. And then I figured it out once I got to college. Well, then I got to college and I started realizing that one thing, if I didn't want to have to go to training table, which was a requirement or training where you had to go to get a certain amount of hours per week. And if you got good enough grades on the team, you didn't have to do that anymore. So I started getting really good grades in college. And one thing would be, if you do decide you think you want to go to law school, be an attorney, you do it as a prerequisite in college, you're going to have fairly good grades, to get into a good law school. But I was a business major in undergrad. I have a business administration degree from Iowa. And I have a minor in GIS, which is Geographic Information Systems, which I have not done anything with since I graduated college. I then played, I still had really, really wasn't thinking about law school. I played semi-pro basketball in some leagues in the United States after college. And then I was deciding what I wanted to do. And one of my uncle was a very good friend of mine. He and I were pretty close. He was an attorney at Polsinelli down in Kansas City. Had been there for 20 plus years. He's an equity partner there. He had just suggested to me, well, maybe you should take the LSAT sometime and consider law school. And I actually had just taken a job when I decided to stop playing basketball, took a job down in San Diego working for a company called Apex Systems in staffing and recruiting. So technical staffing, basically helping assist. So it was sales and recruiting type business. And I just decided, well, I'm going to take this job. I'll take the LSAT. And if I get a decent, you know, do well in the LSAT and get into a decent law school, I'll consider it at that time. And so I took the LSAT, got a decent score on the LSAT. I'd actually just started doing pretty well at my job. I had just going into my second year working at my job, and had to make a decision at that time. Do I go back to law school or do I continue on the path I'm on? It was a pretty tough decision at the time. And I ended up going to law school at Iowa. So it wasn't there wasn't any kind of, I know I want to be an attorney and I'm focused on being an attorney my whole time. It was something I just kind of, I think if I hadn't had that relationship with my uncle, I may not have even gone to law school, frankly.
honestly, Kurt, that's one of the things I love most about these interviews and one of the pieces that I love to unfold and uncover for our students and our listeners. Because a lot of times, you know, we may be feeling a certain way as we're having an experience, or we're just not 100% sure. And so we doubt ourselves. We doubt that gut feeling of, oh, I kind of like this. Oh, this is kind of cool. And in your instance, having just someone who supports and a mentor, I guess my question to you is for those individual people or those who are listening in, and for myself, if you're not really 100% sure that you want to go that route, but you think that you're interested in it, is there a class or two that I should target right off the bat when I'm coming out of high school to just go see and get a little flavor and taste of it? Or, you know, a lot of these kiddos, or I shouldn't call them kiddos, I keep calling them kids. That's not the term I'm supposed to be using. These people, what jobs can they go get to get a little, again, like a little flavor or a taste to know, like, yes, this is a path I want to go down, or this will give me kind of an idea of whether I'm veering the wrong direction.
Yeah, I think some people I know have either they'll try and find some kind of either a paralegal or a position. Sometimes there's firms that might, and again, I guess it depends on. Stepping back even further from that is whether you go to law school or not. A lot of people go to law school and don't become attorneys. I mean, or they become an attorney, take the bar exam, but they never practice law. They work somewhere else. So that's kind of a separate issue of, do you want to be an attorney or are you considering going to law school? Which, having a law degree and understanding law has many benefits or potential uses in all types of things that are not practicing as an attorney. But if you're interested in becoming an attorney, the best ways to do or to talk with or potentially see if there's ways to either volunteer at a law firm to get some experience or at least exposure to what people are doing on a day-to-day basis. Other things are in terms of classes. I know at least like when I was if you're in undergrad at college, at least in business, there's a business law class. There's a lot of, I think, depends on what type of track you're going. But there are a lot of colleges do offer a legal type undergrad class that's related to law. I mean, there are also pre-law tracks that certain colleges have. I don't know if Iowa had one or not. I know some people have a pre-law track that they'll go down. But in terms of what types of people end up ultimately going to law school, it can vary quite a bit in terms of the background that people end up having for what they do in undergrad. I mean, a lot of people are poli sci majors. A lot of people are business, or if they go into business law like I did, they're business undergrad majors or they're accounting majors. But it really varies.
So Kurt, we've obviously shared, and you know that our target audience are high school students here. We thought it'd be helpful for our listeners if we brought in one of our junior achievement students, Elias Lightfoot from Bettner High School, to pose a question to you and see what your thoughts are about the question.
Hi, Kurt. My name is Elias. I'm a graduating senior at Bettner High School. And I was just wondering, what's the most challenging part of your job? And then, like, also, what's the most rewarding?
I'd say for... the most challenging part of my job would be managing client expectations, time, and trying to, at least within the type of work I do, there's not a very set schedule on things. There's often, decisions and work and things that need to be done in a pretty rapid pace. It can be challenging to make sure clients or help clients be able to understand what that, what those realistic timelines might be, but also trying to meet those timelines. And so that can be a challenge. And again, it just varies depending upon what you're working on. Most rewarding, I think, for me would be, one thing I really enjoy is when I work with a client, a client that has founded a business or started a business on their own from, maybe they came from very little, monetarily, didn't have much, been working with this business for, you know, 10, 20, 30 years. And then they end up, I help them selling that business for a significant sum of money. And they, you know, their life's work has been building this business, and they're able to then, see, you know, walk away with, oftentimes a significant sum of money, you know, coming from very little. And, you know, you'd be surprised the amount of people that you might have no idea the amount of money they have that just, you know, came from very little, very humble, humble person, and through hard work and a little luck and other stuff has walked away with, you know, a significant sum of money, from a business they put a lot of time and effort into.
I appreciate that. Thank you. So, to get a little more granular, can you describe like what typical day, where are you going? Where are you sitting? Try to give the kid, paint the picture for the kids, what it means to be sitting in your seat.
So the type of work I do in a business law setting, most of my day is spent in my office. Oftentimes on my, either on the phone with clients, about things, or email communications with clients about specific, transactions, or, you know, it's either, here's this contract, review this for me, give me your comments, give me your thoughts. Here's what we want to do. What do we need to comply with? Here's a potential term sheet for a transaction, either to buy or sell a business that I might be involved in, you know, and start the process of that, which may end up going for, you know, that's the beginning of it. And the process might end up being a 2-3 month process of actually selling or buying the business. But a lot of it is reviewing, emails, documents, other things, sometimes statutes and laws, and a lot of thinking about what this means, what's the, you know, structuring things. So a lot of it is time is spent on your own thinking about things and then trying to communicate those things to clients in a way they understand.
So Kurt, I'm curious, there's a lot of alone work there, right? A lot of thinking, a lot of to yourself. Do you have a group or a team that when you are presented with a challenge or a situation that you're just wanting some feedback or like a brainstorming session, do you have a group that you can do that with? Or is it generally you're just having to kind of refer back to documents and education and yeah, past experiences yourself?
So, I mean, Frank, one thing I'm lucky with, at least being at a firm like Wayne & Waterman, we have, we're a larger firm that has, so there's quite right now we have, I think, between 30 and 40 attorneys here. So one of the good things about that, every day, you know, I'm walking down the hall to another, you know, a colleague of mine or another person in the firm, again, to be kind of brainstorming about, well, here's what I'm thinking about this. What are your thoughts on that? How do you see this? Talking through issues, talking through legal issues, which is very helpful. So it can be collaborative. A lot of the time, though, you're on your own in terms of thinking through the specific issues and what you're working on. But, you know, it depends on the situation. A lot of transactions that I might be involved in, you might have, it'll be myself and another associate, and maybe another partner, another person on the deal. And we're kind of working collaboratively on that transaction along with the client. So it ends up being the deal team.
So, Kurt, I'm kind of curious for our listeners, because this is something that always pops up in every interview. Can someone make a little money being an attorney? Can I have a good living doing what you're doing?
Yeah, you can make good money being an attorney. It all depends upon like a lot of jobs. You know, it can vary depending upon the type of attorney you are, the type of work you're doing, the ability how good you are as an attorney, and the ability you have to attract clients. And again, there's all different types of jobs that attorneys do. You know, I'm in one specific area in terms of a business corporate attorney that's in private practice at a private law firm. Many attorneys are either, they work in-house at a company and that they're in-house counsel. And they would be, you know, they have one client, that's their company they work for, which is a, you know, a different track And oftentimes people go in-house from a private law firm to become an in-house, to, if they decide they want to go in-house somewhere, they go in-house at the company.
Why might somebody do that, Kurt, out of curiosity?
Well, I think a lot of people, it varies. A lot of times someone might do it because sometimes there's different things you may not, you know, you're not involved in billing and the billing with clients. You're not tracking time, which is one thing that, you know, if you're in private practice, a large part of your billing hours based upon time. It may be a little it really varies, I guess. Some people, it can be a little less time involved, or your work life balance might be a little better from an in-house counsel job versus a private practice. But I also know people that work in-house and they work like crazy as well. So it just varies on where you're at.
Yeah.
No, I appreciate that. That was actually my follow-up question. So I appreciate you pointing that. I think there's often in many jobs, right, people have these perceptions or misconceptions about a specific role being tied to, I don't want to be a lawyer because I know I'm going to have to work crazy hours and I want a different work-life balance. So I appreciate you speaking up and saying that there are different places and different types of roles that you can have. And some may require a little bit more, and some you can maintain that healthy work-life balance. I think that's important for a lot of our listeners as well.
Yeah, no. And I think people can certainly find roles as attorneys where you can have a good work-life balance. I mean, it's like a lot of jobs. It really depends on what you want and what type of, how much you want to work and how much time you don't want to work. And there's, you know, there's paths for both as an attorney.
So, Kurt, one thing, you alluded to a few things in terms of your path to becoming an attorney. Would you mind step-by-step explaining the education requirements, the test requirements, and then ongoing to remain being a successful attorney, what's required of you?
Yeah, so you, and again, some of this may have changed a little bit from when I have done it, but the typical path would be, you know, you get an undergraduate, you get a degree from college and undergrad. What your degree is that you get really doesn't matter. I mean, you know, some law schools might prefer certain types of degrees, but for the most part, I think it doesn't matter. I mean, you can have a science degree, you can have a degree. I mean, it doesn't matter what your undergrad degree is. Undergrad degree, then you take a test called the LSAT, which is depending on what your score you get on the LSAT, that's heavily utilized by most law schools. I don't know if I think it's still used by law schools quite a bit. When you're trying to get into law school, it's usually based upon your LSAT score, you know, and then a combination of undergrad, GPA, and other types of, you know, statements, background statements, et cetera. So you have to go to law school, you graduate from law school. And then if you want to practice as an attorney, you take the bar exam, which is typically a 2-day test, 3-day test, I think, in California. Depends on the state you take it in. I took the Iowa bar exam, and then I also took the Illinois bar exam. Today, it's getting to where many states now, if you take one bar exam, it counts in another state. There's some states that still don't have that, but, and then again, if you want to, so you take the bar exam, you then can call yourself an attorney. And then if you want to practice law, you're either, you know, practicing on your own, you're practicing in-house at a company, or you're typically practicing at a law firm. Or there's other paths, I guess. There's, you know, working for the state if you're in criminal law, or working for, and there's a lot of different types of jobs.
Sure. I appreciate that path. You know, again, doing a little homework and research for this interview, and at Lane & Waterman and other firms, similar firms, titles are associated with a lot of people. Could you explain for our listeners what the difference is between an associate, a partner, and of counsel?
Yeah. So, and some law firms there's variations on these, but the classical ones would be, this would be at a private law firm. Someone's working at a private law firm. An associate is a, you know, typically an employee at the firm. You know, they're on a salary. They're, you know, a lot of times as an associate, It's interesting. So unlike other professions, so you get out of law school, a lot of people, you know, you kind of have an idea of how to practice law in a private setting. You have a background, in particular with regard to, you know, people that are involved in lawsuits, litigation type matters. But you're still, unlike medicine, where you go do a residency in law, if you're going to work at a law firm, an associate is kind of, in at least for the first couple of years, 2 or 3 years, you're kind of doing a residency in at a law firm. You're learning how to practice law. You're working on matters and things that a partner is typically giving you and overseeing what you're doing. And the next step up is if you're continuing on as an associate, doing a good job, happy with what you're doing, and everyone at the firm's happy with what you're doing. Then most firms have a track where you can either become a partner, meaning you become an owner of the firm, or some firms use it. There's variations on what they call a partner, but it typically means you're an owner at the firm, one of the owners, and still practicing law the same as you were as an associate. You're more experienced and you're an owner there. Of counsel is typically someone that's not a partner, but they're either retired, they used to be a partner at the firm, or they're someone that's, has the experience level of a partner, but they're not an owner. They're not an equity owner of the firm.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Joy, any other burning questions that are circling around in your head?
Surprisingly, no, not at the moment. And mostly, I think, is I'm really curious to hear the answers to the questions that you've got forthcoming, Matt.
Yeah. So, Kurt, really appreciate your time, but we always try to wrap up our interviews with fairly standard question of, you know, if you're looking at a 16-year-old Kurt, what would you tell him to keep doing, stop doing, and start doing to increase the chances for post-high school success and happiness?
Those are good questions. Whoops, a 16-year-old me. Stop doing. I think I'd probably be less concerned with what other people think about things that you're doing, and probably try to enjoy things more. It's easy to say now, but you know, things can be stressful when you're young and you have a lot of unknowns, and just realizing that you don't need to be so anxious about, whether you're succeeding at this or whether you're doing a good job at everything. In the end, I think if someone, is putting an effort towards anything, despite the fact they may fail here. They may, as long as you keep showing up and you keep, keep doing things, in the end, the long run, the odds are you're going to succeed in whatever you're trying to do. And I think the older and older you get, all the people you're around, those people that end up, you see that are successful, is typically that type of person that, continues to plug away and continues to put effort on things, even if they may not succeed at it. And just realizing that, you don't always see results immediately, and a lot of times it's a long path and things come together and work out. Did I miss one there? You had what I would do, what I wouldn't do. I see. What I would do, I guess that kind of ties into what my answer was there, which is continue to realize that it can be a long path, and can be a winding road on things, but as long as you're consistent, don't get too concerned with, if you have failures and other things, that's the path to continue if you want to be successful in something or successful in general. And then there was a third one.
Start doing.
I probably would have, if it was me, I probably would have started thinking more about my future or my path earlier than I did. Mm. Again, I think I'm fine with the path I took, and it's good to realize that there are people make changes and, you know, take different, you don't have to have a set stone. This is what I want to do from the high school age. But I think I probably would have started thinking about it a bit earlier as to like, what types of things do I want to do? I didn't do that till I was in toward the end of college even.
Sure.
So.
Well, Kurt, I don't think that's all that uncommon, but I do appreciate those answers, and you are a real piece of work, and we appreciate you supporting Junior Achievement and our students here today. So thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks, Kurt.
Thanks for having me on. Yeah, I enjoyed the conversation. Thanks, guys.
Likewise.
Matt, I think every time we finish up or we wrap up one of these interviews, my mind just like spins and spins and spins. I want to comment on each and every way that that's impacted me, and hopefully it's impacting the people who are listening in. And I think to that point, at the very end, when Kurt was answering some of these questions, he talked about thinking more about the future earlier than he did. And, you know, when I think about the purpose of this podcast and why we're doing it, I think it speaks to that specifically, right? We are hoping, my hope is that we are reaching some of these people that are Kurt's back when he was 16, listening to some of these and understanding all the different career paths and the career options that they have. So I think, you know, number one for me, that really at the very end just hit for me. Mm-hmm. And honestly, just in my current role in HR, as I mentioned at the beginning, you know, being part of a larger corporation now sitting here in Davenport in the Quad Cities, just how important ethics and compliance is. And so this role just, you know, being very relevant to today, to my job in HR as well. I think just was, it's, you know, all the stars are aligning, so to speak, sometimes. But for me, it was this inspirational speech of like, keep showing up no matter what. Because honestly, I'm being hit hard, you know, 4 months into a new job after staying home with my kiddos for close to 9 years and whooshed right into the corporate world of, you know, feeling like being defeated sometimes, but, you know, keep showing up no matter what. I think that's just an important, whether you're 16 years old and, you know, you're getting defeated by something sports related. You know, I had my son just have something happen, right, where you're trying to teach lessons. So, you know, no matter what's getting you down and you don't know, just keep showing up. That's the best you can do. And so I really, really stuck to that, that piece for me. So how about you?
That plus the 16-year-old being less concerned about others. I think it's pretty easy in this day and age to be under a microscope, social media microscope from all the kids that are influencers in your life, and allowing that to potentially sway you one direction or another and maybe prevent you from seeking out something that's going to potentially make you happy post high school. So yes, take some risk, get out there, be less concerned about others, and stick to your guns. So I love the idea of that. So hopefully the students see that as well. So Joy, as always, it's a pleasure. I'm looking forward to the next one.
Thanks, Matt.
Thank you.